Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer, not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, for healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning to you. All right. I tried to do this show a few weeks ago. I'm going to give you a different slant on it again today. Let's get to the scenario. You've got bad news. You've been diagnosed with a cancer. You have a tumor growing in your body. You're trying to figure out what to do. And for any variety of reasons, you start looking for alternatives. Lots of people do. We'll see that trend increase. And I watch this all the time. It comes down to a million people are saying a million things, all with good credentials, all, or at least most, generally sincere and committed. And who do you believe? And there's a lot of mistakes you're going to make from that point on. And that's why I do this show. That's why I want to stay focused here to get you my point today. If you are, and I can extend this show, not just to cancer, but to anything. If you are suffering from life-threatening or seriously debilitating diseases, I'm going to focus on cancer today. It's a fascination of mine. And you're looking at the standard allopathic choices, the Kaiser Permanente route, or you're going to go alternative from your local nutritionist to your shaman to your chiropractor to your acupuncturist to your integrative medical doctor in oncology. However you're going to mix this, you end up sitting there looking out to the horizon and going, who the heck is telling me the truth? Who really knows what to do? And a lot of people make a terrible mistake. And I'm not skewing my feeling on this or slanting it. The mistake you make is you decide it's your body and therefore you're going to make your own choices. I just said that's the mistake. It's your body and you're going to make your own choices. You're going to figure out in the melee of confusion that challenges any good cancer researcher or any good doctor, alternative or otherwise, how to actually navigate a disease, a cancer, for a patient. You, John Q. Public, because of all this diversity out there, even if it's well-intentioned, you're going to make the choices for yourself. And I see a lot of people do this all the time, and it's not a good idea. At the same time, I see people just go the Kaiser way, and often that's not a good idea. And at the same time, I see a lot of people go alternative and spend a ton of money. And that's not a good idea. And this is the problem. Now, I know a lot about this. And if you've got a cancer, if you've got a debilitating disease, understand that any doctor that wants to truly get down and dirty in this thing we call health and healing and cure and the whole thing, any doctor that wants to participate in that process goes through the very same thing you're going through. Think about it. You spend 4 years in this school, 4 years in that school, a ton of money in startup costs. Then you get out there, you got a high nut, especially if you're in Orange County, to cover. And you go through many, many iterations of the same thing that you're going through. Who's telling the truth? What mentor is telling you the truth? What dimension of what technique, what therapy is telling the truth? And you get just as confused in your process as your average patient. So it becomes chaos where the blindness and inherent subjectivity in an alternative process is about the same as the blindness and subjectivity of some person out there going, I'll just make the choices myself. It's a zoo. And this is what I've spent many, many years trying to clarify, because there always is an optimal way to approach a disease. And it's usually a mix of things. Now, I was on air last week telling you if you have a tumor, cut it out, unless there's going to be life-threatening consequences. But I know people with breast tumors that should have cut them out yesterday and got into big problems because they didn't. Tumors are to be cut out if the cost of cutting them out. You get yourself the best surgeon your insurance can afford or money can buy, and you take that thing out. And why? Well, I put the article on the site last week. It's talking about tumors and the millions, if not billions, of cells that they're spreading through your bloodstream each week looking for a place to metastasize. Even if you have something as meek as a grade 2 rather than a grade 3, I did not say stage, a grade 2 cancer. Your path report says grade 2, not grade 3, worse yet, grade 3. Regardless of what you got, that tumor is sending millions of cells into the blood each day looking for a place to extravate and go into your organ spaces. So cut it out. Now, after that, what do you do? Do you do the chemo? Do you do the radiation? And this is where I pick up, because I think after the solid advice of cutting out a tumor, I think then when we get into chemo and radiation, now you have to look at this differently. And of course, you have to add to this now, and you'll see this happening increasingly over the years, immunotherapies. Immunotherapy is going to compete with recommendations for chemo and radiation increasingly, but really what we're going to do is add to it. We're going to use chemo, then we're going to go after immunotherapies, and that's what they're doing now. And the AMA, the FDA, and everybody is slanted towards making sure it's just going to add to chemo. So what do you do? Well, here's today's show. Somebody sent me, and of course, this is no news to me, but people send me things. It's a great little clip. I'm going to play it for you. It's a guy named Tippins, Mr. Tippins. This is not a joke. I'll put this link on my site. And he cured his cancer. He had late stage lung cancer. And he was told, you're going to die. And he went to his friend, who was a veterinarian, that gave him a parasite medication normally used for animals called fenbendazole. Fenbendazole. Look it up. Fenbendazole. Just look it up and you'll see its association with cancer cure. Now, this guy cured his cancer. This guy's alive. This guy's well. You can look at him. He doesn't have late stage cancer anymore. That's what the show is about. Because the question, of course, is, I have cancer. I have metastasis. This guy took fenbendazole. He's all over the country telling people to take it. Should I take it? Listen, and you know, if you've been in this position, there are 100 things like that. All of which have people running around going, I did it, and I'm cured, and you should do it too. Now, the point of this show is, where's your perspective? How you understand this? I want you, the goal of today's show is I want you to understand this the way I understand this. Not the way you understand it. Not the way your friend down the street understands it. Not the way your medical doctor understands it. I want you to understand this the way I understand this. Because I am going to get you closer to reality than anybody, including you. Listen to the show. It's an authentic show. It's a real story. This guy did cure. The narrator here is a medical researcher. I'm not sure of his name, but it's legit. And again, I'm going to put the link on the website. That's straighttalk.cc. Listen to this guy's story. His name is Tippins.
Cured your cancer, you better be ready for some skeptics. But Joe Tippins says it did save his life and others. And now even cancer researchers are open to the possibility it might be true.
My neck, my liver, my pancreas, my bladder, and my bones. It was.
This is this guy, Tippins, and he had lung cancer metastasized everywhere. They gave him up for dead.
Everywhere.
2 years ago, Joe Tippins says he was told to go home, call hospice, and say his goodbyes. The doctors were unanimous. He was going to die of small cell lung cancer.
Once that kind of cancer goes that far afield, the odds of survival are less than 1%, and the median life expectancy is 3 months.
Tippin says he went from 220 pounds to 110, but that was January of 2017. Today, Tippins is very much alive, and what he credits for his survival has doctors scratching their heads and the rest of us raising eyebrows.
About half the people think I'm just crazy, and half the people want to know more and dig deeper.
Tippin says he got a tip, not from a pharmacist.
Now, I'm going to stop it there. If you can hear, Joel Tippins got terminal cancer from the lung metastasized. He did this drug, it's a parasite medication called fenbendazole, on advice from a veterinarian who we actually knew, I think, as a friend or something. Now, you're looking at a guy here, and of course, the first question is the guy lying? I assure you, he is not lying. I assure you, this is not an exaggeration. But that's how crazy it is. Because people will look at something like this, and they're certain this guy's scamming. They're certain that he didn't have the cancer. Now, his medical records, they're accessible. This story is verifiable. It didn't hit media, which is mainstream here, because it was a lie. And so you got to sit back, come out of shock, come out of the stress and the anxiety that you feel in your journey, and you got to realize this guy did have late-stage cancer. This guy did beat it. He is healthy. You can look at him and see that. Doesn't take a genius to look at a guy that looks like he's vibrant, and this guy is. So, as you're going to find out, no one is arguing with the fact that, in fact, this guy had late-stage lung cancer, and he's fine today. Now, the issue begins for you, for me. The issue begins with, was it the fenbendazole that cured him? Now, you have to understand, I personally have had clients who have come to me and they've cured or gone into remission when they shouldn't have. Now, I could tell you that for a fact. I don't tell them I treat cancer. I don't tell them I cure cancer. I tell them what I tell you. Get healthy as fast as you can and let the body take everything in the kitchen sink, blend it together, and figure out its own cure for your cancer. The body cures. But that aside, let me tell you this. Fenbendazole, if you study it as a scientist, is definitely associated in ways every single scientist will attest to fight cancer. We understand its mechanisms. Here, you want to hear a mechanism? Here's one of many research papers. Listen to what the abstract will tell you. Now, it is written by 8 Chinese scientists. And of course, you know, the Chinese are stupid. They don't know anything. This isn't a good American study. And that's the first attack something like a claim of this will hear. It's a foreign study. And the Chinese aren't smart like the Americans. Well, you're not asking yourself that question anymore, are you? China means something. So does Russia. And I'm telling you right now, there are many medical institutions that publish studies like this because they can get money for it. The reason you won't have as many studies, even though fenbendazole has tons of American studies, the reason it's more difficult to get funding to do a study like this is because the National Institute of Health is owned. Do you understand? It's owned. When your doctor crosses his arms and says, fenbendazole, where's the published studies that we can trust? The answer is no one in America is going to get any money. You got that? But if you persist, like I do all the time, and you land on studies that do have real clout, you'll read stuff like this. Fenbendazole and its synthetic analog interfere with the HeLa cell proliferation and energy metabolism via inducing oxidative stress and modulating the MEK3/6-P38-MAPK pathway. pathway. And that's where the problem begins. Are you going to understand what that means? Are you even going to remember? Can you even remember, if you're sick, what you ate for breakfast? Is your medical doctor, when you throw that study in his face, you walk into oncology and say, "Oncologist, we've cut out the tumor. I don't want to do the chemo, but I want to try fenbendazole." And the doctor says, "Fenbendazole? That's not in my standard of care. I am not going to back that up. It's not been legitimately studied." And you say, "Well, yes, it has. Here's about 15,000 publications. And the doctor says, "Number one, these are foreign. And number two, what the doctor doesn't tell you is he couldn't understand them if his life depended on it. Guys, this is called science. And when you study something, you're going to sweat over whatever the heck these scientists are actually trying to say. Now, there's one of your early problems. Here's another problem. And this, if you take nothing away from this show, please take what I'm about to tell you. You cannot design a study with something like fenbendazole in the following way. So let me explain this. I tried to explain this 2 weeks ago, and I didn't like the way I did it. But I got it down now. So try to understand, when finally you find a study, a published study, a study paid for by Harvard University Medical School, backed up by the NIH and the largest, biggest, most reputable, credentialed oncology researchers in the world. This is how they design the study. And you got to get this. They take two people under the standard of care, meaning two people with the same cancer, both of which are getting the same kind of chemo or whatever else. And then they give one fenbendazole and they give the other no fenbendazole. And they may take 10 people or 20 people or 30 people like that. And the reasoning is, well, one, we're going to give both of them fenbendazole. We're going to give both of them chemo. We're going to give one group fenbendazole. And the other group, we're not going to give any fenbendazole. And then we're going to watch the outcome over a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. And based on that, we're going to tell you whether or not fenbendazole was effective in reducing metastasis or extending lifespan or something like that. You cannot do a study like that. It does not work that way. You can't do that. Because there's no way you can assemble people with any type of insight. I'll give you an example. When you take 10 people that have had chemo and you take another 10 people that have had chemo and you give one group fenbendazole and the other group you don't, and then you monitor it, there are so many other variables. You think that you're taking two groups from the population and you're assuming that basically, since they've both been given chemo and one group hasn't and the other has, that you have a random study, meaning that every other characteristic in each of those groups that would determine outcome homogenizes and completely you can eliminate those factors from the study. And you can never do that. If in the first group of 10, five of those people have severe emotional trauma, and in the other group of those 10, there are many less people that have had severe emotional trauma. If in one group, most of those people come from a very toxic area, and in the second group, you've got very few that don't. And if you add up all the variables that determine outcome, all the variables, which you can never do, you're going to have a deeply skewed study. So we do these studies. Two groups, both have chemo. One gets the fenbendazole, the other one doesn't. We proceed in the design of the study on the assumption that all the other variables that can control the outcome are equally distributed between both groups. That is impossible to do. It is absolutely impossible. And we give this baloney term to the process called a random study. A random study means this group of 10 and that group of 10 were randomly chosen. And because they were randomly chosen with no focus on any one group, both groups are basically the same. That is never reality. It challenges the very core of a study. So right there, we're in trouble. There's another way we're in trouble when we design these studies. The second way is, if you were doing a study to determine whether or not a right jab could knock out an opponent in a boxing match, and you analyzed 1,000 fights, and you looked for the number of times that a right jab or a left jab could knock out an opponent, you would have to conclude that just studying a jab and its effect on a knockout would give you a dismal number. Jabs generally, unless it's Sonny Liston or George Foreman, don't knock out anybody. But let's just say you decided you were going to do that study. Like you decided you were going to do a study on whether or not fenbendazole given to someone who simply approached their disease, their cancer, holistically. You designed a study to just give them that and then not give them that. Or take two people. Again, you have this problem. How different are they in other ways? But let's just say you did take two people or two groups of 10 and you gave one fenbendazole and the other one no fenbendazole. And you studied the outcome and the progression. Or you changed fenbendazole to turmeric or curcumin or green tea. And you watched the outcome, the effect of the single thing you did over time. If you did that with two studies, trying to determine the effect of a right jab in terms of knocking out an opponent, you would decide you don't need a right jab. You would decide that based on outcome, whether you throw a right jab or not, it doesn't really affect the knockout rate in a boxing match. And you could publish a study like that. Now that's what they do. They take a single agent, like fenbendazole, and they study it against fenbendazole, no fenbendazole, in as close to a homogeneous, identical group as they can find, which of course, I said before, is a joke. But that's what they do. And my point to you is, if you study a jab and its effect, you're going to find a jab is next to useless in terms of a one-shot knockout effect. And then you'll conclude that the herb or fenbendazole or dichloroacetate or digestive enzymes don't work, just like you'd conclude the jab doesn't work. Now, suppose you did this study. Suppose you said, well, the jab doesn't work, but if you hit someone with a jab and then you give them a hook and then you throw a cross and an uppercut, wouldn't you say that a jab is an important integer? Wouldn't you say that what you found by doing a study where you took a jab and three or four other techniques and compared it to those three or four other techniques without the jab, wouldn't you then say you would find a difference in outcome? And you're darn right you would. When you fight, you lead with a jab to create misdirection and distraction to throw the rest of your punches. That's the purpose of a jab. It's critical. But if you design a study based on the intention of showing that a jab is going to deliver a knockout punch just by itself, that study will fail. Now, you got to think about this because this is what they did with fenbendazole. This guy really cured. He says it's fenbendazole. There was a study done with like 40 or 50 people that once again showed fenbendazole wasn't that effective. This is what they do all the time. What they should do, and the point is, they need to mix the fenbendazole with 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 or 20 or 30 or 40 other things that also block these cancer pathways. Now, if you look at it that way, you'll get a result. But then again, they say, if you look at it that way, how do you know what worked? You see, their system, the way they see the scientific method, doesn't account for mixing 10 to 20 to 30 to 40 different things to produce the desired effect. Because if you do that and you get a desired effect, you don't know what did what. And that's the problem. The way we study, the way we use science to understand the efficacy of alternative modes to serious disease is skewed. And that's the argument they use to make you think it doesn't work. You're going to find a theme, a common thread in all my shows. If you have disease, learn the art of health. Feed health. Forget the cancer. Cut out the tumor. Feed health. But that's an art. It's an art you need to learn. It's not a checklist. It's not a bunch of Cliff Note versions of Get Healthy. It's an art form. If you see it that way, then when you reverse engineer it and you study the people that actually got healthy, you'll find out inadvertently, by hook or by crook, by persistence and faith, that's what they did. Moral of story, the scientific design doesn't work for this kind of medicine. That's what you have to learn. Feed health. Cut out the tumor and forget about the cancer. We'll see you next week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.